Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, welcome to the Football Writers Podcast. My name's Mike Calvin. I'm joined by Tony Evans of the Evening Standard and David Priest, the former Sunderland and Aberdeen goalkeeper. Now, it gets serious. It's knockout football, the time when the Champions League becomes the good old-fashioned European Cup. First up, Spurs in Turin. Juventus are on a great run. They've conceded only one goal in 16 games. That about to end, Tony?
I'm not sure it is. I mean, I think it's going to be a huge test of Tottenham's credentials and a massive test for Harry Kane. I mean, this is a defence that not only mean, but they know all the tricks in the book. You know, they've been round the block. And and they started off the season badly. They had to reorganise from last year. Benucci left, and so, you know, there was wondering whether they'd get it together. But they've hit a bit of form in the past couple of months, and they're not letting anyone in. But I say, you know, it's they've you know, this is a team that's been to two Champions League finals in the last 3 years, and you've got to get up early to beat them. They're pretty cynical and they're pretty tough.
And they've also got probably the preeminent goalkeeper of his era in Buffon. How good is he?
To me, he's got to be mentioned with the very best. I'm not old enough to have seen Lev Yashin, but he's definitely in that bracket as well. But it's not just down to him, of course. You know, he's had his injuries this season. Maybe that's down to a bit of age as well. But Szczesny's come in and did a great job. And I mean, they paid 10 million for him in the summer. Had a great season with Roma last year. And it's been seamless. And then again, with Buffon coming back on the side with their last three games and three more clean sheets.
Mm. At 40 now, as a goalkeeper, when do you begin to feel your age?
For me, it was almost overnight at 30. It was almost a split change like that. But I think that's... When you've got someone like Buffon, he's been lucky with injuries, he hasn't had any long-term injuries, that will have helped. And sometimes it's not about tapering down your regime. I think a lot of players in the past have fallen into that trap of sort of slowing down and doing less as they get older. When the likes of AC Milan, Juventus, it's not the kind of the methods they use. They actually step up their training methods, especially with weight training, and that helps so that your body deteriorates a lot quicker after 35 with muscle loss, so it's probably down to his regime in Italy.
Mm. And they've been way ahead of these things in the game in Italy than they have been in...
What, in terms of the science?
Yeah, yeah.
Well you look at the AC Milan team of the 90s and...
Yeah, with their famous lab.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, exactly. And they had a lot of players in it who were not just in the 30s, but going to the mid and late 30s, and it just shows you the work that they did there.
Mm. You were at Wembley on Saturday, Tony.
Yeah.
After that, Mauricio Pochettino was talking of Dembele in terms of being a genius. Maybe a bit over the top, but that shows how important he is, surely.
A lot over the top. I mean, he's a good player and he makes a huge difference to Tottenham. You know, physically, he's powerful. Although I think I would have shone in that midfield with Özil and Mkhitaryan on the other side. You know what I mean? The thing is, as good as he is, there's something a little pedestrian about Tottenham's midfield. Then, you know, once you get packed defence, they find it hard to unpick them a little bit. And Dembele's not going to be the man to do that. But what he'll do is he'll police the area behind the attackers. He'll break down, he'll get to the tackles, and he uses the ball really well. And he's vital to them. You know, they've suffered a little bit out wide because Kyle Walker made a huge difference to them, giving them width. But they're going in the right direction. They're a good side. And when Dembele's in, the better.
Mm. It might be a bit of a lazy comparison that I'm making, but it just there's no better sight when Dembele gets a ball and you know somebody's closing him down and he picks up a bit of pace and he just sort of brushes them off and just strides past them like Gascoigne used to do. And he just makes it, and he's a bit more of a physical specimen than Gazza was, but he's so effective when he does that. And when he goes past that first line of press, he just opens the pitch up for them.
Mm. There's no Alderweireld again in Turin. How much of a blow is that?
I mean, he's been out a long time now, and he's just come back into the side. So it's not they've managed without him. There's certainly a stronger team with him in the squad. But I think that I went to see them in the FA Cup game last week, and you just want him to pick the ball up, and he looks for them long raking diagonal balls. It's not just defensively they miss him, because like I said, he can set up attacks like that as well.
Mm. Inevitably, Harry Kane scores again in the North London derby. Daniel Levy, the word is now he'll let Kane go for €350 million. Even if he did do something daft and say, okay, let's say €200 million. Would he lose his credibility?
Oh, completely. They need Kane really badly going into this new stadium next year. After that, what's anyone's guess? You know, we know how Levy operates and you know how he likes to deal. But next season, they need Kane. And he's developing into one of the best strikers in the world. This will be a huge test for him in Turin. You know, we'll see whether he can make the step up from a brilliant Premier League striker into a world-class one, even before we get to the World Cup. I think he can. His movement's brilliant. His awareness is superb. You know, he never lets the defence settle. He's going to come up against a different... You know, the one thing about the Premier League, even when Arsenal packed the defence, there's a sense of panic there. You know, everyone back, you know, except Özlem Mkhitaryan, of course. Everyone back. And, you know, but there's all, no one's quite certain where everyone else is. There's an unsteadiness there. You know, Petr Cech is the only person who seems to know what he's doing there at times. And, you know, in that sort of environment, Kane's always going to find space. Against Juventus, it'll be a lot more structured, a lot tighter, and they won't allow him as much room. But I think he's good enough to find it.
Mm. Juventus won at Fiorentina on Friday night 2-0. Typical of that, Serie A helping their Champions League teams by the scheduling. Do we do enough in this country to help our Champions League teams?
Yeah, probably not, but I think it's just to keep an even keel on all the fixtures, simply because you're bound to have, if you give Sean sort of one team a bit of preference, the other managers are going to complain inside the Premier League as well. So it's better just to keep everything the way that it is. I mean, they should really help them if that's what the aim is, but the aim is for Premier League is to make sure it's an exciting product for us to watch. I think anything outside of that, I don't think there's much cause for concern for them.
I think the interesting thing about that game is that really encapsulated the Juventus's, you know, sort of knowledge. You know, Pochettino talked about, you know, sort of, you know, cheating the opposition, that sort of thing, last week. Well, Juventus are brilliant at it. The VAR incident with the penalty, encroaching all the time. You know, let's just keep it going until we force the referee to go over, check it, and he'll reverse the decision.
That was about another 3 minutes gone, wasn't it?
3 minutes, yeah. But, like, that's they've got that sort of experience, and what they'll do, they'll look at Tottenham. We've seen Tottenham aside that have melted down under pressure a couple of times, particularly Dele Alli. It wouldn't surprise me if they give Dele Alli the treatment, trying to disturb his physical and mental equilibrium, let's say.
In other words, wind him up, get him sent off.
Exactly.
OK. Allegri, terrific manager, certainly in an Italian context. Do you think we'll see him in the Premier League?
It's more than possible. I think that you look at, rather than just looking at him tactically as well, I think his management style, you've seen that in the summer. Now, everyone was surprised when Bonucci went to AC Milan. Now, we've seen what's happened at AC Milan and Bonucci's form since. And I think that it just shows that Allegri knows exactly what he's doing there and he trusts himself in his decision-making.
Yeah. They know when to actually get rid of a player, don't they, the best managers?
Yeah. Well, he might well take the Conte path, mightn't he? You know, to Chelsea, win the league and then get sacked.
Yeah, and pick up another wheelbarrow load of cash when
exactly.
He leaves. OK, so the floor's yours, Tony. I'm sure you're itching to tell me how good, stroke bad, Arsenal are and were.
Do you know, the more pieces Wenger gets of the jigsaw, the less he sees the overall picture. Actually, I quite liked his plan to sit deep, you know, because Tottenham play such a high line. You know, you think you've got a new striker with a bit of pace, although he hasn't trained because with the team because he's got the fever. With a bit of pace, you've got Ozil, Mkhitaryan, you win the ball deep, you knock it over the top. And I like the plan, but it all involves people looking for the ball in midfield, getting on it, and playing that pass. And unfortunately, his two most talented players went missing in action, and even worse, they never helped out coming back. Right from the beginning, Pochettino targeted Bellerin. He got Son over there, knocked the ball into him. And guess who's in front of him? It's Ozil, who's just signed a new big contract. Is he going to track back? No chance. And on the goal, Ben Davis brings it forward. You know, Tottenham have struggled to get width from the fullback. Someone's got to get across and make it less easy for him to put across him, because you know what? Normally, you'll let the fullback have the ball because he's not going to be the best deliverer of it. But make it difficult for him when he puts it in, put some pressure on him, and he's probably going to mess up. But no, he can knock a lovely little ball into Harry Kane, and then you've got centre-halves who can't jump. And it's you look at it, it's so frustrating. I watch Arsenal and I bang my head on the desk because they've got good players. And they do the same thing. But I looked across at one point, and they're going forward, and there's a line of five, you know, against the Tottenham defence. But two of them are the full-backs. Tottenham win the ball back, and you've got two centre-halves backpedalling on an island, and, like, with terror in their eyes. It's mad. It's insane. And it happens all the time.
Tony's right about what he was talking about, Juventus, the way they defend as well. And it's just because you've got numbers back doesn't mean it's safety. And I think Pochettino's, he's identified a real weakness there, because on top of the goal that Harry Kane scored, he had two very similar chances where he just glanced past the post as well. So it's obviously something that Pochettino wanted to target, and Harry Kane getting in between the two centre-halves.
You mentioned Hector Bellerin. Yeah, as an individual, really like him. You know, intelligent, imaginative, very thoughtful lad. I thought he gave himself away, and he gave probably Arsenal away when he talked about Alexis Sanchez and how almost uncomfortable the group was with the intensity of his ambition. Does that tell you everything?
It's been levelled at the players that it was them that needed to step up to Sanchez's standards rather than, you know, Sanchez being coming towards them. I think it's just dangerous. It's a dangerous environment when you get players, when there's such a disparity between players, and players can still do that. They can still be ambitious, but they've also got to meet a sort of middle ground to make the team better. And obviously that wasn't the case. I mean, you talk about Bellerin. He is a fantastic player, especially going forward. But if you look at some of the stats and some of the passing tracks that where players get teams getting behind Arsenal, it's always down that right hand side in behind him.
Now, I've got a slightly different viewpoint on that, because I interviewed Bellerin about 15 months ago when he was flying, and he was great. And we're talking about leadership, and I was saying, you know, there's a lack of leadership in the team. He said, well, I want to be a leader. You know, he recognised that there was. You know, he said, the stuff that, you know, you talk about after the interview is over. And he was saying, you know, we need someone to bring everyone together. And perhaps Sanchez's former leadership was so self-centred. And I think that's where the relationship with Bellerin went wrong. And Bellerin had a more sort of team point of view. However, that said, and since that peak, his peak about 15 months ago, he's been pretty poor, and did coincide with him signing a new contract. So, you know, you can judge that as you will.
Let's look at Manchester City, Dave, if we may. Pep Guardiola is talking about the Champions League, and it's how you control the bad moments and the emotional lows. They haven't had too many of those this season, have they? When you look at them in the round, is that a team which should win the Champions League?
Maybe should's too strong a word, but definitely could. I mean, it's the frailties that they've had at the back. Maybe not frailties, but it's if they do have a weakness, you know, it's been pinpointed as defensively, and that's true. But at the same time, you've got to counteract that against of how strong they are going forward. You know, if you've got the ball and they're as devastating as they are going forward, then defence becomes less of a problem.
But you spoke earlier on about goalkeepers almost exuding confidence around their defence. Edison's doing that in spades, isn't he?
Yeah, and not with his hands most of the time. He's just been absolutely exceptional. And it's not just... I think some people... I try and highlight it on social media, the qualities that he's got. And some people just come back and say, oh, well, it's a professional footballer passing a ball. But when you're on the pitch and you've got that... You've got that perspective and you're actually playing through bodies. You can't see how far players are apart. And he's playing the ball through strikers, taking other players out of the game. He's just... His whole demeanour it fills people with confidence because there's no panic at all. There's no panic in him. So if there's no panic in him, then there's none in the defence in front of him.
Is there an element in this, David, though? It's working in the Premier League against teams, you know, as we've seen from seven down, all, you know, relegation fodder. In the later levels of the Champions League, he's going to come up about City, not just... not just any individual player, but City are going to come up against teams that are much better, are much cuter in the way they play the game. And will it be different there, do you think?
Well, I mean, if they're going to have trouble, I mean, they'll still try and do it. Now, if they get caught a couple of times or it's just not working for them, they have got a plan B now. They've got that where they can just stretch teams and he's got this rocket of a left foot where he can just ping ball 70 yards into people's path and onto people's chests. The teams that they come across in the last eight in the semi-finals, if they get there, they won't be dealing with that every day every week in league football. And like I said, that's the difference. Guardiola has evolved. He's came in with his philosophy. He thought this would work with Bravo. He hasn't. He's just tweaked it a little bit and given himself another option, and it's made them a far better side.
And it worked against Napoli, didn't it? So
yeah. Sergio Aguero, it's the fifth successive season he's scored more than 25 goals in all competitions. That says everything about him, doesn't it?
Oh, he's a magnificent goal scorer. He's a great player, isn't he?
Is he one of the great strikers in Premier League era?
Oh, definitely, without a doubt. He's fantastic. I mean, what's always bemused me is that Guardiola wants him to press more. And I'm like, you know, it's just Pep, just let him score. Yeah. You know, it's I think, without a doubt, he ranks up there with the Shearers of this world as one of the finest strikers of this era.
Mm. And De Bruyne, some of the passing is just ridiculous, isn't it?
It just looks so simple as well. And you look at the assist that he has, it's not just about him. You can see that Guardiola and the rest of the side, they've worked on a way of him being able to utilise that properly. So I see with a couple of the assists at the weekend, the ball goes forward to the furthest man out wide. The ball's played back to De Bruyne. And as the defence pushes up, as it should, it just leaves that little gap in behind the defence and the goalkeeper. And he's expert at just guiding in there. And when you've got defence going forward and strikers running on the ball, there's only going to be one end result.
That result, you know, this week, we're expecting City to win in Basel. What about Liverpool, Tony? They've got Porto. Is that something that they really should gobble up?
With Liverpool, you never know. The way they're playing up front, they should win a game like this, but you never know what's going to happen defensively. I thought against Southampton at the weekend, I thought there were some people complaining that the performance wasn't dynamic enough. I think what Liverpool needs, a couple of dull wins, you know, where you let those strikers score. You know, Firmino and Salah were excellent again.
It's a fantastic partnership there.
Oh, brilliant, brilliant. And, you know, and they don't make any stupid mistakes at the back and win. And I think for Klopp going forward, there's been so much of a frenzy about Klopp's teams. They get frantic too easily. Mm. The games, it's great when they're on top, but they spin out of control either side of the ball too quickly. And I think they need to, especially in Europe, to control the pace of games a little bit more. They can do it for spells where they blow people away. But when you've got Salah's pace up front and you've got Firmino's intelligence and movement, then you're always going to have a great chance. But, you know, you look at Salah, you look at De Bruyne, and, of course, Arjen Robben. And the Champions League is like a showcase for players Jose Mourinho hated.
We'll come on to that later.
But with Klopp, it's all this talk about heavy metal football, and he probably described it better yesterday as high-risk football, and that's how he likes to play. So that's probably, gets frustrated with all of us when we criticise them for the way they play and the way they defend, when he knows that, well, we're playing high-risk football and he accepts those risks and they're not going to always come off.
Well, if you accept those risks, you're going to end up on the roller coaster and you're eventually going to end up turning the fan base against you, and you eventually, well, he won't get sacked because he's on a contract until I think it's 30-15. but, you know, it's you can't just say, I accept high-risk football. I mean, it's history has shown he's been here 2.5 years. And the high-risk football hasn't worked as well as it should have. And Liverpool, still, in terms of the performance, underperforming for the amount of, for the size of the club they are and the amount of money they've spent.
Mm. What about a signing like Virgil van Dijk? Does that minimise that risk? And what is the impact of a defender with real assurance? Because I find it quite interesting watching him. He's a good communicator, and that's one thing perhaps that Liverpool never had. And does it also, in that equation, matter a lot that actually Klopp has said to Karius, you're my man?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't watch Van Dijk a lot sort of in his later days at Southampton, so I wasn't really aware of how that the situation was affecting him, whether he was playing well or not. Looking back at yesterday, you know, a lot of the stick he was getting from the Southampton fans, he was smiling, it didn't affect him at all. I mean, you're saying about that it wasn't a great performance by Liverpool, it didn't need to be. That's where the gripe from the Southampton fans comes in, why they're unhappy, because they basically rolled over and allowed their bellies to be
taken. Yeah, they're in trouble, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. There's not playing well, and there's not playing well without any fight, and that's exactly what they've got there, and that's a big problem. But going back to Karius, it's the consistency in playing. In the last two games, I've given him a lot of credit because myself, I've given him a lot of criticism in the past. He hasn't been certainly the keeper that they signed for Mainz. And I think that it's that consistency. And you don't get that from playing and training every day. You've got to be playing games in that sort of pressurised environment. And you've got to give him credit for the last two games, certainly.
But again, back to the high-risk football and getting caught up in a frenzy at times. What a defender like Van Dijk needs to do is bring stability. It needs to bring structure, which, you know, we talked about with the Juventus, and keep everyone from getting sucked in to this madness.
We spoke about it before with Lovren. You can see that Lovren's state when decisions are given against him, he sort of loses control, and that's what's been the problem. Like you said, it gets caught up in this hurricane.
Mm. Quite probably the tie of the round, Real Madrid, PSG this week. Which manager is going to get sacked after this one?
I suspect that Zidane's on the edge. Well, he is on the edge. I think it's a difficult one. I think probably neither of them will see the start of next season. This game's got so many subplots. And I think one of the main things is Neymar and his performance. I mean, it's so obvious it's untrue. You know, going from Barcelona and now going back into Madrid. I think...
When do you expect that to happen?
Well, I don't think anytime soon. But, you know, I think...
There is an assumption, isn't there? There is a growing assumption that he's going to go to Real Madrid.
That basically, it's the middleman. But I think that they're still keen at PSG to become a European power, and they think that, you know, he can lead them in. So I think they'll give it another year before they look elsewhere. But his performance against Real, I think, will tell us a lot where he's going to end up and how soon it'll be. Mm. And I think, you know, the other thing is Ronaldo, who is has been so brilliant in the Champions League. He scored so many goals. But now, that lack of cartilage in his knee is beginning to catch up with him. Real it's a bit of form recently, but they haven't had the sort of season they want. It's kind of an all or nothing tournament for them at the moment, isn't it? In the Champions League. And I think Ronaldo tends to lift himself.
He does, and, you know, the numbers are ridiculous. 550 goals, hat trick on Saturday. As you say, they came back, they beat Sociedad on Saturday 5-2. Are we in danger sometimes of taking players like Ronaldo for granted? That actually we should be saying to ourselves, hang on a bit, this guy is special and we need to remember him.
There's probably two sides of the coin there. They've probably been as good for each other as they have been bad because of the competition they've had. They've pushed each other to hold different levels that were what we've seen before. But the fact is that because there's two of them and they're not just out there on their own, you're right, we probably won't appreciate them like a Maradona or a Pelé or a Cruyff.
It's a golden age with the two of them, isn't it? You know, everyone just says Messi is the better out of the two. I think over a season, I prefer Messi. For one single game, I'd always have Ronaldo. You know, he might be more selfish, but his mental toughness is fantastic. And he was one of the greatest sights in football, running with the ball.
Mm. To be a great player, do you have to have a huge ego?
I don't know if ego is the right word. You have to have a real inner belief, an unshakable belief.
It's like shoulders back, I belong here.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you
swagger.
Yeah, you know Ken Dalglish better than anyone, and you know he's so personable and so humble. But I tell you what, put it right down to it, and he's the most confident person, or he has more self belief in himself that you'll ever see in anybody.
Kill you as soon as look at you.
Yeah, there you go.
On the pitch, there he is.
With Europa League, you've given Arsenal a bit of a shoeing. It's a really fascinating game against Östersunds with English manager Graham Potter. Spent 7 years there. Emotionally intelligent, got his degrees. It's a different type of manager. This stage is going to be really interesting for him, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's the one manager in this tie who actually deserves the nickname the Professor. he's done brilliant. He's come up the hard way. And what's interesting is people like him who've gone out of football and moved in different circles. Reminds me of Paul Tisdale at Exeter. They have a different approach, not the traditional football approach in terms of man management. You know, they deal with people. You know, they're inclusive. They explain things to the players, and you don't get the traditional. You know, you're not performing, so I'm going to ignore you. And it works. Yeah. And we don't see enough of it in football. Mm. And he's done fantastic over there. I mean, where is it? It's 3 promotions in 5 years, taking this tiny team to the top division, and not only that, into the knockout stages at the Europa League. And I think, clearly, Arsenal should... They should be the sort of team that Arsenal run all over. They'll have enough space, and you know, it doesn't help that they've only had one competitive game since November. The season doesn't start till April, does it? So, you know, that's a winter break. and, you know, so that doesn't help. But it wouldn't surprise me if they're very well organised and they keep it tight and they frustrate Arsenal.
You played in Scandinavia, didn't you? What's the standard like there generally?
It's very good. Technically very good. I think that, and I played in the Danish Super League, and it was a lot of the sides, certainly the top half of the division, championship level. But the way these clubs are, it's easy for them to foster sort of a family type environment for players. They're all on an equal amount of salary. They all spend a lot of time together. I know that a lot of the days we had double sessions, and all that time you're training in the morning, and in the hours in between you sort of everyone's sort of socialising together off the field, because the town's much smaller. There's much more of a community feel about it, and it's much more easy to garner that togetherness.
The opposite of Arsenal.
Opposite of Arsenal, yeah. And it's interesting, you know, if you look at Arsenal very briefly, they're going to rely on Lacazette, who's got no confidence because, you know, Aubameyang's not going to play. It's a weird one, that, isn't it? He comes to the club and almost like implodes. Yeah. Why is that?
Well, I mean, the way Wenger's handled him, you know, I mean, there's echoes of Giroud as well, isn't there? You know, he gets strikers, he buys them, and then he doesn't fancy them. And, you know, even though the team are underperforming up front, they don't get on the pitch. And no wonder Lacazette hasn't got confidence. I mean, you know, the two chances he missed. I thought at the end on Saturday, I thought the first one was very difficult. It bounced in a bad place and come up too high. And the second one, he pounced on a mistake, which was brilliant. And, should have done better. That's one he'll look back on and regret. But he's a good striker. And the mad thing is, when he did play, he seemed to connect more with Sanchez than anyone else in the team. And then, of course, Sanchez goes, and now he's got no understanding, doesn't seem to have an understanding with it, many other players. And, he's on the bench even when Arsenal are struggling. Wenger was strange after the game. He talked about the Premier League being the priority and then going, but the Champions League's, getting in the Champions League's the priority. Well, they're not going to get in the Champions League through the Premier League, so he better make the Europa League the priority quick.
Yeah. Europa League, Celtic are in it. Yeah, you watch quite a bit of football up there. How good are they? And can you give the viewers and the listeners some sort of comparison between Celtic and the English Premier League or Championship?
I think the biggest strength and the biggest thing that Celtic have got going for them is the manager and the way that they play football. You can see that they're not going to be tested, but when other sides are playing against Celtic, whether they're playing at Celtic Park or at home, they raise the game, they raise their effort levels. It's just natural. That's what you do. You're spurred on by playing against big sides. So they've always got that, even though the quality of the opposition might not be the same as the Premier League. They've still got that competitiveness. And I think going into Europe, I think tactically, the last couple of seasons, Brendan Rodgers got spot on. You know, even against Manchester City, he did well. I think did the draw 0-0 with them. It's much more. Brendan Rodgers is more comfortable in this arena. He, tactically now he's progressed, and I think that he more than anyone he's going to enjoy this, and I think that said, going into these games, it gives him a bit more of an upper hand than. If you're looking at saying it's just a Scottish club in Europe.
He's got his eye on Celtic are a big club, let's not get that wrong, but he's got his eye on where he sees his bigger things.
As Arsenal?
Well, yeah, Arsenal definitely. I mean, he probably thinks there's a sniff of Chelsea at some point. He wants to be at the top table in the Premier League.
Mm. More than a sniff of Chelsea going around at the moment, Antonio Conte, he seems to me to be completely demob happy. He's basically saying, come on, sack me.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it would it'd suit them both to limp to the end of the season. But he's in that position where he's like, well, what are you going to do? When he signed up for this, he hasn't got where he thought he was going to get. He's had very little control over transfers. He's been left with a squad, which he inherited a squad which was unbalanced, miracles with it. And it hasn't got very much more balanced in all his time there. And you can see why he's unhappy. I mean, when you think, this will be the third consecutive Chelsea manager to have won the league and then be out of there the following season. Mm. That's just utterly remarkable. And I think he's got no illusions. He's been unhappy almost from the start. Mm. I mean, certainly from certainly after the first transfer window of his Chelsea tenure. And it wouldn't surprise me if the first leg against Barcelona goes wrong, they replace him between legs and with the vague notion of 2012 again. Well, there's news for them. They haven't got players with the mental robustness that the 2012 team who could pull together and fight. What they've got there is a bunch of players who are not turning in performances.
If that scenario unfolds as Tony predicts, we could have Luis Enrique, who's been sending out the signals that he's ready to come to England, going back to the Nou Camp. Or going back to compete against Barcelona.
Yeah, well, you wonder if that's what's the motivation is, to bring that narrative in and sort of if it doesn't go well that first game, it's they're going to need something special going back to Spain. But it's when you look at Conte, you just see he's like, it's not that he's not bothered, but this is not my problem. Because the players that have been brought in have maybe not been the ones that he wanted. Mm. I think I really like Zappa Costa. I think he's done a good job at right back when he plays at right back. Morata's been a good signing. He's been injured. But the rest of them have kind of just been good players, but not great. And I think that's it's kind of sort of like his protest against.
Well, Bakayoko's stunk the place out, hasn't he?
Well, you know, it's unfortunate how badly he's been playing. And he's sometimes you have sympathy for players. I mean, even watching Ross Barkley the other week against Bournemouth, I felt really sorry for him because, one, he's new at the club, he's still got to get to know the players, but you could see the clever movement of Pedro and of Eden Hazard. Yeah. And then Ross Barkley's like sort of kind of looking over his shoulder thinking, well, where should I be now? And it was it does take time for people to assimilate into teams, but at the same time, I think there's a big expectation when these fees appeared that they can just seamlessly go into ties.
Mm. And you know, increasingly over the period that Conte's been there, in almost every press conference it's been, you know, ask the board, not my players. You know,
The board are going to have to make some decisions soon, simply because not just the manager. If you look at Real Madrid, there's a lot of, you know, understated courtship rituals going on between them and Hazard and also Courtois. Mm. Could they lose both?
It's possible, yeah, definitely. And I think there's more chance of Hazard going to the Bernabeu sort of next season than there is Neymar. So I think it'd seem to be a more natural replacement for Ronaldo and the system that they've used so far, although they'll probably rip it up, you know, anyway. But yeah, it's there's certainly an element of disenchantment from both players about how life at Chelsea's developed. And if that happens, then they've got real problems.
Mm. Talking of disenchantment, Dave, what about the relationship between Jose Mourinho and Paul Pogba? Not all sweetness and light, is it?
Well, it certainly wasn't yesterday. I mean, for good reason as well. I mean, for the hour that he played, Pogba's touch was off. He's given balls away. Himself and Lukaku, sort of, they look sluggish. You can see why the criticism that come at them. And it was everything that was bad about how United have played. And if it wasn't for sort of Martial and Sanchez, they looked like they had a little bit of quality, and they looked as if there was going to be a clinical edge. It was going to come from them too. But with Paul Pogba, it just seems to be he's Jose Mourinho's not protecting him in any way now. He had the talk with him at the side of the pitch last week, and this time he wasn't afraid just to bring. I mean, even before Newcastle scored, he was preparing to bring Michael Carrick on for him anyway.
The problem with Mourinho is that, well, the problem with Pogba is he's not a thinking footballer. You know, he's perfect for the Premier League and there's physicality and there's pace and there's power, but he's not. You know, he's not the brightest in football terms. And Mourinho distrusts flair, but loves thinking footballers. I mean, compare Lukaku and Pogba to, say, Drogba and Lampard. You know, he likes that sort of player, the players who will think and work. And if you don't get that combination, Mourinho quickly falls out of love with you and doubts you, points the finger at you and hangs you out to dry.
Mm. And the essence of man management is obviously getting the best out of the particular group of players that are given to you. How can you do that? Let's look at Mourinho and Luke Shaw. He praises Luke Shaw for his diligence and the way he's come back. Gives him a new contract or an extra year on his contract. Bosh. He's immediately dropped. What sort of message does that send out?
Well, I mean, it is like to give him with one hand, take him with the other. And you don't know what goes on behind the scenes. Sometimes some managers, they like to keep you on your toes, so they don't sort of keep you in the loop. They can be a little bit aloof. I don't imagine Jose Mourinho's like that. I think he's probably straight down the line. He tells people what they think. But sometimes you can play too many mind games, and in the end, players don't know where they stand or whether the manager's future or not. So it's a difficult one to do. And I think, for me, it looks as if Mourinho likes that part of the job more than the actual football at the moment. I think yesterday he was a lot more graceful because gracious in defeat because it was Newcastle. It's his ex-mentor's sort of cathedral, Bobby Robson, and he's very gracious in defeat afterwards. But I think Other than that, he left all the mind games
privately seeding. He was a living embodiment of Rafa Benitez's favourite statement, football is a lie.
Well, we've got Newcastle for 1 second. New goalkeeper made his debut, Martin Dubravka, from Sparta Prague. To be perfectly honest, not many people knew anything about him. He was exceptionally good, wasn't he?
Brilliant. He could not have wished for a better debut, I think. It was all a big surprise when the lineups came out. First, it was an attacking lineup, named two strikers in the two forwards in the side, and also putting Dubravka in for his first game. And it could have gone either way. You know, if United's front three are on song, then they can destroy anybody. Doesn't matter who's in goal. Mm. But just from the very start, everything he did is just a gradual build up to the great save from Martial with his feet. Come to penalty spot area to take crosses, and it wasn't just settling him down, settled the whole side down, settled the whole stadium down, and it kind of the confidence just sort of bred from there. And he's someone who first came to my attention when he was playing for Esbjerg in Denmark. He was very highly thought of, but then he went to the Czech Republic, Slovan Liberec, and even last summer he was a free agent when he went to Sparta Prague. And only come to Newcastle's attention sort of in the last month or two. And credit to Simon Smith and the goalkeeping coach and to Rafa, because they've sifted through a lot of goalkeepers. It's an area they've wanted to strengthen, and Rafa bringing his own keeper. And he's done well by this one.
Mm, you know Rafa pretty well, Tony. He'd have loved yesterday, wouldn't he?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I don't think Jose Mourinho was his favourite person. So he's desperate not only to get safety for Newcastle, he'd love to be able to kick on with them and, you know, take them into contention, get them into that top six or seven and maybe win a trophy. I think increasingly he's feeling that's not going to happen because of the way the ownership situation is, and which will be a great shame for Newcastle if he leaves in the summer.
Mm. We mentioned management, very delicate, difficult job. Wayne Rooney's been talking about his ambition to be manager of Everton. Realistic?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think Wayne's brighter than most people give him credit for. And I think he showed that when he did some the television analysis over the last week or two. I think he's more thoughtful about the game than most. I think he's a long, long way from becoming a manager. I think he'd have to serve a significant apprenticeship to develop. But I don't think it's out of the question. I certainly don't think it's out of the question. And he's committed to football, and I think he'll stay in the game afterwards.
You've been in dressing rooms, David. Are there players that strike you as potential managers, even when they're playing?
Yeah, but surprisingly, the ones that go on to be successful and the ones who sort of become the most diligent at it are probably the ones that you don't expect it. And I think it's those people who have that who were surprised themselves by it, who never thought they'd be going to management, and then they get the taste for it, and then it's the hunger that drives them. And sometimes with Wayne, he's had such focus on him from a very early age that focus becomes, it's not just about physical burnout, it's about mental burnout as well. And when you become a manager and even just a coach, that focus and the attention you put on football, it more than doubles because it becomes a 24/7 job.
And the other thing is, I think it's more difficult for forwards who are by nature selfish, you know, because they want to score goals, but also, you know, they're not looking up the pitch to see what the opposition are doing. You know, they're always sort of turning and running that way, hoping for the ball. Yeah, I think it's easier for defenders and midfielders and goalkeepers who can see what's going on right across the pitch.
We've got some questions from the listeners and the viewers. David Giles asks, Tony, is Manchester City's spending sustainable?
Well, yeah, it is. I think they've satisfied UEFA's Financial Fair Play Committee, and they've actually gone to great lengths to make sure they've done that. Not like PSG, or a bit like, who cares? So, yeah, I think City's is, and I think the Premier League clubs and across Europe should be very, very scared.
Mm. Keelan McCafferty, David, asks, with the right additions in the summer and also keeping hold of De Gea, how good can United be next season, or will it even matter considering what Pep's up to across the other side of the city.
Well, if it continues the same way, then it won't matter. But there's just something not right with United. Like I said yesterday, maybe they've fallen into the trap of transfer fees equating to performance, because it's not working for Manchester United at the moment. They've I think they're just lacking a real sort of direct way of playing, an obvious way of playing. I think yesterday they did, don't get me wrong, Newcastle played very well and United weren't at the best, but they still had that clinical quality in their side. Mm. And they're relying on that, on those little flashes of brilliance, when really they should be far above that. They should be having sort of, like I said, a methodical way of playing. A real way of playing. I just couldn't see that yesterday.
Mm. Shane Davitt asks, do you think it would be good if clubs had to have at least two youth team players in the starting lineup who'd been with the club for more than 5 years?
Oh, it'd be brilliant, but good luck with that. Try getting that through in this day and age. It would be brilliant. I mean, I still think football is a... Football's link to the community is important, and I think seeing a team as the flag bearers of the area around it is what made it great. I think the more that contact gets stretched and broken, I think it is disturbing. The one positive thing, we talked about City before, City's academy is very good, and they are committed to getting youth players in. Mm-hmm. So,
although if you look at them competitively, the under-23 team are doing badly, the under-18s are doing, individual players are coming through.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the nature of development, David, that, you know, it's just maybe one or two will justify, you know, a £200 million investment?
Yeah, well, it probably is better off going down that route. I mean, you look at Chelsea, Chelsea's youth teams winning everything, and not many of their players coming through to the first team. So it's in theory, it's not about the result, it's about the development of players. Mm. But also, you know, if you're developing the right way and if the style of football is going all the way through the club, then there should be a sort of a thread that runs all the way through.
I think City are getting them more right than most, although you're the expert on this subject.
Well, I wouldn't say that, mate. A final question from Billy Hush. This is probably best for you, David. There seems to be universal agreement that Liverpool need a new top-of-the-range goalkeeper. So, this coming summer, who should be their number one target?
Well, if possible, if it can get him, then it has to be Alisson at Roma. I've said this before, and I know they've made inquiries about Butland as well. There's been some discussions there. And as well as Karius has been performing lately, and however he might go until the end of the season and still keep up the same level of performance, it's the same as bringing Van Dijk in, you know, to get to the next level. And to get the two or three places the higher they need to be or they want to be, they have to have the personnel that's capable of doing that. And so defensively and in goal, they have to do that. So it's, I can still see Karius being there next season. Of course, he will be. Mignolet, probably not. But definitely there'll be a new goalkeeper next season.
OK. So we'll end it all by going back to where we started, the Champions League. Just a final question briefly, if we could. Do you expect a Premier League team to win it this season? If so, who?
No.
That's quick.
No, but I think Manchester City have got a very good chance.
I agree that they're the best equipped.
Yeah. I know this isn't original, but I can't see beyond City. I think the dynasty is upon us. Thanks for joining us here on the Football Writers Podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.